shaking it up all here for you, the Arizona homeowner, at Rosie on the House. Since when do we play, what is this, bebop music? What do you call this?
I don't know. Kind of sounds like...
What genre do you call this? What do you call this, Mike? What is
50s
this?
Rock?
50s rock?
Yeah, old school R&B, I suppose. It's Martha and the Vandellas, Heatwave. From about, I would guess it's mid-50s, maybe early 50s.
Just enjoy it.
Okay.
Right. Just Diner looking music. To critique. Come on.
All right. It is a heat wave, that's for sure. We're feeling it all over the great state of Arizona. We're here with Todd Russo of Rias, talking air conditioning. We have a letter that came in wanting to know, when do I and when don't I actually have to replace my equipment? In this particular situation, the unit's 22 years old.
Right. I mean, you know, some of these old ghettos lasted forever, but you know, I mean, it's like the old analogy. We always use vehicle and now car analogies, right? I mean, do you keep a car when it has 250,000 miles on it? Yeah, maybe. But, you know, it's not going to operate the way a new car would, right?
Right.
So you can, you know, you can keep a car running for 250, 350, 400,000 miles. But it does cost you a lot more than you're factoring in. So.
Yeah. At 22 years, he needs to start considering.
Yeah, he does.
He needs to put away a little bit every month to start preparing, because he's well beyond the expected life expectancy of his equipment.
Yeah, I was in a home not too long ago where the couple had two 20-year-old trains, and they kept them really well maintained, and they were put in right, and they lasted that long.
Yeah.
And the conversation was, do I replace them this year? And I said, you need to replace this equipment, but it can get you by another year. But don't be surprised if you're calling me in July or August when the pressure becomes, you know, the wear and tear on the equipment becomes so great because the humidity is 35-40%. It is 115 degrees out, and you're asking a piece of equipment that when it was brand new to perform under these extreme circumstances, and now you're taking a 22-year-old unit. So I said, you know, if you're... You know, this year you got to pay for your kids' college and it's not the right year and you want to do it next year, that's fine. Just understand, you know, you don't have the performance or the reliability. You know, you're living with subpar performance and reliability of the equipment. But if it's a decision you can't make because of finances, I understand. If you don't want to finance it, I understand. But it's an inevitable circumstance where you're replacing it.
I'm asked a lot of times when the air conditioning unit is made up of two pieces. You know, mm-hmm. we've got the package units that sit on the roof.
Correct.
And then we've got the two pieces where the furnace air handler is inside and the coils outside.
Correct.
Replacing both is more expensive.
Correct.
Very often in a cash-strapped situation, only one unit is replaced. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I would disagree with you a little bit in a sense that you said it's more expensive. It might be more expensive in the short term, but in the long term, it's significantly less expensive to replace both pieces of equipment. First and foremost, the most obvious answer that comes to mind is when you replace one piece of equipment, you get no warranty, right? If you replace both pieces of equipment, you're probably getting at least a 10-year warranty if it's registered. So you've got that 10-year assurance that if something does break, at a minimum, all you have to do is pay labor, assuming you don't have a labor warranty. But that equipment's also not going to be performing correctly. I mean, it'll perform, meaning it'll create cold. But to me, performance is different in a sense that when you're in a really well-performing home, you'd be surprised how much cooler that house feels,
mm-hmm.
how much more consistent the temperature is room to room, how much less your energy bills are, how much cleaner the air is, how much more reliable the equipment is. So what you're doing is, yeah, you're spending $2,500 for a new compressor or $2,800 for a new compressor, but you're not getting the performance if you replace a new piece of equipment, and you're not getting the warranty that you'd get if you bought a complete system. And that's because systems are designed, they're match systems, right?
Sure.
So a coil is matched with a compressor. You can put any coil with any compressor in most circumstances, assuming they're the same size, and they'll produce cold. But it doesn't mean they're going to perform well.
Okay. Very good.
Hey, we've had a couple questions come in this
yes.
morning, people who couldn't hold.
Okay.
Okay, so Ron from Phoenix wants to know what y'all think of underground returns.
I mean, they're great. It's most of the time underground returns are put in when there's space constraints in the attic. That's typically when they're put in. Or in high-end custom homes, they're put in quite a bit. Assuming it's sized properly for that unit, they're wonderful.
They tend to be more expensive.
Yes.
Before we pour the concrete, we actually get a backhoe on site. We excavate some pretty considerable sized trenches underneath the whole house. We run 18 to 24-inch diameter PVC pipe. We glue it all together. Actually, in the old days, this is probably before you were born, we used to run them in concrete pipe.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one problem with that. They leak.
Yeah.
Water can get in there?
A lot of water can get in there. I was involved in several expert testimony class action lawsuits where people were, the mold was horrible, mm-hmm. and in the fact that the moisture down there was actually attracting critters that were living under there.
With the plastic PVC, water can't seep in.
That's right. It's impervious. Right. It seals up. And we would actually send a vacuum through the underground return mm-hmm. areas, clean them up real good. Then we'd extend them up above the slab, and we would cap them so no construction debris would end up down there. Yep. And then at the point the mechanical contractor was installing their equipment, everything got sawed off to concrete level and secured. But underground return airs, in my opinion, I don't know that there's a better way to do a return air.
Well, I mean, they're great.
They're
expensive. If your budget dictates it, I mean, many times they're a requirement just because of the space constraints. Let's say you have a flat roof house.
Yeah.
That's where you see them mostly. But you're right. There's not a lot of heat that impacts the air return. I mean, one thing you have to take into consideration, a good performing piece of equipment will reduce the air going into the system and then out to the supply and the exhaust by about 20, low 20s, right, degrees. Yeah. So if you have 60-degree air going in, 80-degree air going in, you'll usually produce 60 or 58 degrees going out. And that effectively cools your house down. When you have returns in your attic, if they're not insulated properly, that 80-degree air, by the time it hits that first coil that removes the heat, it might be 84 degrees.
Yeah. Makes a big difference.
Well, you get 64-degree air coming out instead of 58-degree air coming.
There you go. Folks, we got back. More air conditioning following up in the last half hour of Rosie on the House.
Download show archives and take Rosie on the go. Sign up for the Rosie on the House weekly podcast located under the media tab at rosieonthehouse.com.